put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who is Gordon Freeman's thesis advisor at MIT. Ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey, there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Stephen Glicker. And in this week's special episode, I'm sitting down with Jeff Strain, one of the co-founders of ArenaNet, makers of the very popular Guild Wars and Guild Wars Factions. So just to let you everyone know, I'm actually in San Jose at the Game Developers Conference. I'm not having a normal show this week because I'm literally on the road. I'm actually staying in my friend's place. And maybe I'll take some pictures of my friend's place as well, because this guy restores old arcade games for hobby, and there's literally his garage is filled with tons of old arcade games, and actually right next to my room is a full-size cabinet Robotron game that I am playing. It's quite a bit of fun, so I'm always surrounded by games everywhere I go. But that being said, a couple of months ago, I sat down with Jeff, and he and I talked about Guild Wars, and at the time, Factions wasn't announced, and we only got we kind of got cut off in the middle of our interview. We only got to talk for about 20 minutes, and I always wanted to do a follow-up. So this time, we got a nice follow-up interview, over an hour. We talk about Guild Wars, Guild Wars Factions, and a whole bunch of other interesting things. We talk about their amazing technology behind Guild Wars, and how it allows people to play the game anywhere in the world pretty much simultaneously. There's only one server for all of Guild Wars. Other things like they have no fee, how that's going for them, how the business model's working out for them. We talk about the real roads that Guild Wars is making with the esports. And they're actually, you know, if all the esports out there, I think Guild Wars actually has the biggest shot at becoming an official sport, the way they set it up. We talk about that and a whole bunch of other really interesting topics. Jeff's a really great guy. He's actually one of the guys from, he's actually started out in Blizzard and was one of the people who wrote the original Battle.net. So he has a lot of interesting war stories. And with the success they have at Guild Wars and the amazing ground they're breaking, he's just a real fascinating guy to talk to. So sit back, relax, listen to my interview with Jeff. Throughout the entire week, I'm going to be posting continuously. Go to the site. I'm going to have tons of pictures from GDC. I'm going to post interviews as I get them. So just I don't know what the format's going to be this week. It's not a normal format. No news, you know, no reviews or anything this week. When I come back, we'll go back to normal format. But you guys are probably going to get a ton of interviews all this week. So as I said, sit back, relax, and listen to me and Jeff talking.
So on the phone, I have Jeff Strain, the co-founder of ArenaNet, makers of the incredibly popular Guild War and the upcoming Guild War Factions. How you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing fine, Steve. Thanks for letting us have another chance to talk to you.
Yeah, no problem. So last time I spoke to you, you were alluding to an expansion. It's not an expansion. It's actually an addition to the Guild Wars family. But now the cat's out of the bag. Factions is coming out. And let's just get that off the bat. So this is not an expansion pack, correct?
Yeah, it's not. There's a couple of reasons why we really point that out. First of all, and most importantly, it's not an expansion because you don't need Guild Wars to play it. You can go to the store and buy Guild Wars Factions, take it home, install it, and have a complete standalone game experience without any, you know, you don't need to purchase anything else. And of course, you certainly don't need a subscription fee, as is always the case with Guild Wars. So, you know, the reason we do that is because our intent from here on is to release a new, we call them campaigns, a new campaign for Guild Wars twice a year. Mm-hmm. And we don't want it to be the case 2 years from now when we're on campaign five or six. And, you know, you've never played Guild Wars before and you want to try it out, that you have to go back and buy a bunch of stuff or feel like, you know, you're 3 years behind. We want you to just be able to buy it, play it, and have a good time. And then if you want to, go back and experience the things that have come before it. So that's the major reason that we say that it's not an expansion pack. Also, though, is the fact that, you know, usually when you think of an expansion pack, you think, I'm going to get, you know, more skills, more monsters, more quests, maybe a new profession. And certainly you get all of that with Factions. I mean, if you're an existing Guild Wars fan, you're going to have a ton of stuff to love here. But more than that, we really want to make sure that with every new campaign, we are introducing fundamentally new gameplay mechanics into the game. And I don't just mean new strategies. And, you know, again, we certainly are introducing new strategies through the new skill packages, but I mean new play mechanics. And so, for example, in Factions, there's an entire territory control game mechanic that is overlaid on the game. And that is kind of the new big feature, guild alliances and territory control. So we really want to make sure that the experience itself is fresh and fun every time. And then finally, just in terms of the raw amount of play material that we're giving to you, you know, this is a game. This is not an expansion with another, you know, 5 or 10 hours of play or something like that. This is a very much a full game.
Yeah.
And that will be the template going forward as well.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, you just knocked off like 10 of my questions right there. Just
sorry.
No, that's all right.
I'm going to make you improvise.
Man, you were very comprehensive there, let me tell you. No, but yeah, in fact, when it was announced a few weeks ago that this is, you know, the price point and the date, you know, it's coming out April 26th, and the price point is, I believe, $50 for the regular version, and then the deluxe version, I think, is $70. I was reading some of the forums, a little balking, because people in their minds think that, you know, this is an expansion pack. But it's very important to note this is not an expansion pack. This is another game in the Guild Wars universe. It's a standalone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So what does this, besides the stuff you were saying there, how does it work if you, a lot of people have been concentrating on how this works if you already have Guild Wars, but I'm actually almost more interested if you buy Factions and just play this on its own, how is the gameplay experience different? Because obviously you have the two new classes and the whole new world to explore, but how is it going to be a different game if you're just playing Factions and not with the original one?
Okay. Well, first of all, just to tag on to your previous statement there, you know, I think that you were kind of mentioning the forums, and one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, if anybody ever brings up, hey, you know, I thought this was an expansion, you know, why is it $49.99 at EB, then, you know, they're immediately followed up by lots and lots of people saying, you know, as you were just pointing out, no, it's a full game. Here's all the reasons why. And I think that people really do fundamentally understand the fact that, you know, we do not charge a subscription fee.
Right.
You have to look at the full year that you've been playing with Guild Wars and not paying, you know, $15 a month or whatever the going rate is today for MMOs. And, you know, weigh that against the new stuff that you're getting. I think everybody out there really understands that if you just want to look at it from that standpoint, from the value standpoint, we're the only game in town. Nobody can even touch us on the value proposition. So, yeah, we're real comfortable with that. I mean, we are very committed to always making sure that we give people more for less. And, you know, we're certainly doing that with Factions, and we will continue to do that as well. On to your question, you know, what is the difference between the Factions play experience and the Guild Wars experience? Well, first of all, you know, it's our second time out of the chute. Guild Wars broke a lot of new ground in a lot of areas in terms of its use of the instancing model and the unique skill system where skills are all designed to be balanced, really kind of enabling competitive PvP for the first time in an RPG, and also just skill-based play, even if you're a role player. You know, the game is never about grinding. The game is about how good are you? How can you tactically outmaneuver these monsters and win the mission? So given that we were breaking so much new ground, you know, inevitably we're going to step back at the end of that and say, okay, where did it really work well? And where could we maybe, you know, refine and polish a little bit to make an even better experience for Factions? So Factions will reflect our analysis of where Guild Wars hit dead on and where maybe it could have been polished to have a little bit of a richer experience, and that's all going to come to bear in Factions. A specific example is the density of the quest content. You know, the landmass in Factions is about two-thirds the size of the total landmass size in Guild Wars, mm-hmm. And yet the amount of content, just in terms of the number of quests and missions and things to do, is not two-thirds the size of the original. It's denser. It's a denser experience. Mm-hmm. In any given area, there's going to be more to do, more people to talk to, more quests to take on, and just a denser content experience. And that's something that was directly driven by our analysis of the original game. We're also introducing a lot of new play types, a lot of new mission types. That allow you to play the game in different ways. So, for example, we're introducing something called challenge missions, which are kind of like your traditional story role-playing mission, except that you're scored. There's a scoring mechanism in there, and you can see on the leaderboard what the high score for the day is and what the high score of all time is and your personal best high score, and you're competing against yourself, you know, either solo or with teammates, whether they're real people over the internet or henchmen, to try to get a better score. And it's actually really fun to always be trying to push, you know, do it just a little bit better. How can I more efficiently take that group out over there and then sneak around this side and gain the advantage and grab these resources before they notice? So, you know, that also there's new, competitive missions, which bring kind of an RTS element into the game. There's just very, very different play experiences built on top of the kind of the core foundation of what Guild Wars was all about.
So it's almost like Guild Wars 2.0. It's almost like you took everything you learned from the first one and made, it's almost like a sequel in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. That's accurate.
So out of curiosity for gameplay, if you only own factions and then you want to join a guild and members of that guild own both games, how does that work? Like, if they jump out of the factions world and go into the original Guild Wars world, can you still talk to them? I mean, is there like an invisible wall that's blocking you? Because I mean, that's a very real concern when you're trying to do what you're trying to do.
Right. It's actually a very simple mechanic. You can always chat with them. You can always play with anybody in your guild missions, cooperative and competitive missions that you both have access to. Guild halls are always shared by everybody regardless. In other words, we are introducing 4 new guild halls with factions, but you don't need to own factions in order to be in those guild halls. So if your guild chooses a guild hall, you don't have to worry about who owns what. Also, all of the core PvP content takes place on the battle aisles, and that is also shared regardless of what content you've purchased. And as we continue to enhance the PvP experience with new tournaments and new combat arenas, everybody will get that. That will stream live to everybody simultaneously, regardless of what content you own. The only thing that you cannot do is you cannot go into cooperative and, you know, so role-playing and PvP content that is campaign-specific. For example, in factions, there is a new type of PvP battle called an alliance battle, mm-hmm. Which is large-scale 12-member teams, multiple teams competing against each other to push the battle lines back and forth across the world of Kantha. And you can only participate in those if you own factions. So anybody in your guild who doesn't own factions will not be able to participate in that type of battle.
I see. And just out of curiosity, if you have the original Guild Wars and then you buy factions, how does the original Guild Wars change? Besides, you know, everyone's been going over the two new character professions, the Ritualist and the Assassin.
Right.
But are there new monsters? Are there new quests? Obviously, there's new equipment, but specifically, there's new talents, but I'm actually almost more interested in like monsters or quests or things that change the world itself and not so much the play mechanic.
Right. Yeah. So the advantage to combining your accounts, in other words, to buying factions and adding it to an existing Guild Wars account, of course, as you're pointing out, is that your characters can travel freely back and forth.
Right.
Specifically, your original Guild Wars characters can travel by boat to Kantha. Your faction's characters can travel by boat back to the continent of Tyria, which was the setting for the original Prophecies campaign. You share skill unlocks. You obviously share guild membership and account storage and all those things. So there's a strong benefit to adding, you know, new campaigns into your account in that you're growing the world. Mm-hmm. To answer your question directly about what our plans are for the original continent of Tyria, mm-hmm. We will probably continue to make small changes and seasonal changes. We may hold live events there. But fundamentally, we do not plan to go back in and repopulate or redo any of the quests or stories there because our development energy and focus is on the future. Like I said earlier, we're going to be developing 2 new campaigns per year.
Right.
And so, you know, our development team right now is about 110 people, and they are all completely focused on delivering those. We have 2 teams that overlap to deliver these. So each campaign gets a full year of development from a full-size development team. And, you know, we don't really have the time or resources to go back in and change the existing Guild Wars content.
I see. So it's basically, you know, each game is kind of standalone. If you buy the factions, it will enhance the Guild Wars original experience, but otherwise you just really have to keep moving forward if you want to experience the brand new gameplay experience.
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about two development teams, and actually I found that pretty interesting, is that you actually have, because just to get this done, I mean, people might not think and realize how difficult it is to put even, you know, small content changes in these games, and you guys are doing something ridiculously ambitious. I mean, you're coming out with two new games twice a year, basically. I mean, it's pretty ambitious. But just, so you're doing it, you have two teams, and each one develops sort of, one's an odd number campaign, one's an even number campaign. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that is actually how it works. For example, factions, which will ship on or be on the street on April 28th,
right,
was actually started last summer.
Hmm.
The pre-production work for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's had essentially an entire year of development. Campaign 3, which we will be releasing later this year, started last November. And so it's been in production for quite a while now as well. The team that is currently finishing up factions after a small break will come back and hit the ground running on Campaign 4, which is slated for this time next spring. So yeah, it's quite an endeavor, and keeping it all organized and keeping all the overlapping schedules in progress and you know, everybody synchronized is quite a challenge. You know, it's one of the reasons that we have so many developers here,
mm-hmm.
Because it's an ambitious goal. And you know, fortunately, we have the streaming technology which makes it all possible. You know, the game was built from day one with this on-demand asset streaming technology engine underneath it, and none of this would be even remotely possible if we didn't have that. If, for a specific example, we're holding our factions preview event March 24th through 27th. That's at the end of next week, and this is a massive preview event so that we can expose the whole world to what factions is all about. People, you know, all existing Guild Wars customers can play. They can invite up to three of their friends using an in-game Gmail style interface, or you can go pre-order the game and get a pre-order package, and that gives you a unique key to access it. So this is going to be a massive event, and the interesting thing about it is that everybody who plays in this event will have factions. We're right now, we have been for about 3 weeks, streaming all of the factions content down to everybody who's playing Guild Wars around the world. As you're playing through the game, it's using idle bandwidth to stream down the content, or if you just open the game at the login screen and just let it sit there as a screensaver, it's sitting there streaming down the content to you in the background. When Factions starts, when this preview event starts on the 24th, everything you need to play Factions is already on your hard drive. The only thing that makes it not the full Factions is the content bits that we have set in your account on the server. You know, that's the way that we pull all this off, is that we're able to constantly stream down assets on demand as you play the game, so that you've always got fresh content waiting for you whenever we're ready to make it go.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are you worried though? I mean, one thing that next week is the Game Developers Conference, and I always sit in whenever there's a MMO roundtable or discussion. I always go to them, and you know, we always hear things about people pirating or making their own boards. I mean, Ultima Online is a perfect example because it's been around the longest. You know, people have reverse engineered that thing to the point that you almost can't even tell the difference between the actual game and people's home-brewed, Ultima Online worlds. And it's already happening with World of Warcraft. You know, people are starting to figure out how to reverse engineer this stuff. Since you do stream so much and put it onto the user's computer, I mean, are you worried about that at all? I haven't read anything about anything on Guild Wars and anyone even attempting or getting close to this, but I was just curious if it's got to be a major concern.
Yeah, you know, it's really not a major concern. Mm. I think that one of the advantages we have, you know, we change the game constantly.
Mm-hmm.
We're always introducing new features, new gameplay mechanics, refinements to the existing play mechanics. Somebody could potentially reverse engineer the game, but on the server side, but the engineering effort involved would be staggering. I mean, the engineering effort to even get it to where it is today would be tantamount to developing your own game, and you might as well develop your own game if you're going to do that.
Right.
You know, what's on the client is not where the value is in the game. It's what's on the server that's the what we call the, you know, the secret sauce. That's really where all of the play logic, all of the world simulation, all of the pathing algorithms, you know, all of the skill execution, everything happens on the server. The only thing the client does is just kind of reflect that in a dumb way. So the real game runs on the servers, and it would be exceedingly difficult to reverse engineer that. And even if you did, you know, we'd already be two or three campaigns down the road by then. And, you know, as I said, each new campaign introduces fundamentally new play mechanics. And I also think that there's much less of an incentive to do that for Guild Wars because we're not charging a subscription fee.
Right.
You know, you as a player, there's no, you know, why would you run on a different server? It's not like you're paying for it anyway.
Yeah, that could be why we're not seeing this. I mean,
yeah, there's no incentive to go reverse engineer. There's no financial incentive for anybody to reverse engineer the servers.
You guys thought of everything.
Well, I tell you, honestly, Steve, we didn't think of everything. We had a fundamental belief that subscription fees were complicated and that players didn't like them. And what has wound up happening is that, you know, as we pursued the no subscription fee model, so many benefits have fallen out of the back end of that. You know, another, if I can just digress for a second, another perfect example of that is, you know, since we announced factions in January, our player population, not in terms of the number of new accounts per day, but which is continuing to grow very steadily, but I mean, just in terms of the number of unique players per day, really started growing very strongly again. And the reason is because people who bought Guild Wars last spring and summer and fall and had a good time playing it, put it back up on the shelf, and now they're pulling it down again because Factions is coming out, everybody's getting excited, and they're getting their characters out and, you know, blowing off the dust and getting ready for it. And we're thrilled with that. That is so cool that you don't have to feel, you know, if you're paying a subscription, you either play it every month so you can justify paying that, or you cancel and you stop playing it forever. But games that you can put up and take down and put up and take down, like your old favorites, you know, that, I mean, to me, some of my fondest, you know, Civilization, my God, I put that game up and took it down so many times over a period of 5 years. You know, Diablo was another perfect example. I mean, I, you know, put it up, take down, put it up, take down. That's a cool way to play games. And I, you know, we're thrilled to see that Guild Wars lends itself to that as well. You play the game when we release factions, have fun. You know, if you're not the kind of player who enjoys PvP or, you know, wants to find every single item in the game, you just want to go through the story and enjoy it and feel like you had fun, great. Put it up, and we'll catch you again for Campaign 3 next fall.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm 100% guilty of the exact same thing. You know, I enjoy Guild Wars quite a bit, but, you know, I have to play, literally, I have to play a lot of games, so, you know, it had to go on the sideline. But as soon as Factions came out, I jumped back on to, you know, quite frankly, finish, in a way, Guild Wars to get ready for the next game, and also just to see what was new and what changed and how much you've added to the game. So, and it's great, the no subscription fee. By the way, how is that working out? I mean, it's very obvious, you know, when you first launched this game, a lot of people were questioning this. It's like, well, how are they going to make money? And, you know, it's obvious. You guys are going to be making money by, hopefully, it's almost like people have said this before, the collectible card game approach. If you like the mechanism and you like the game itself, you'll want to come back for more and experience new cards, or in this case, new chapters of the game. And that, you know, is where you can make the money, is actually selling the new chapters, the new campaigns of the Guild Wars game. I mean, has this been working out as well as you think it would? Has this surpassed your expectations?
You know, I really honestly think it's fair to say that it has surpassed our expectations. You know, Guild Wars, we passed 1 million sales in late August, which was very shortly after we shipped the game. And that's, you know, for a first game from a first-time studio, I mean, obviously we were thrilled with that. I mean, that level of success is quite elusive in the industry. And so, you know, it has been, our player population has been growing at a consistent rate ever since then. And so, you know, we have a lot of people around the world playing this game right now. And the nice thing about it is that they're all excited about factions. I mean, we're excited about factions. I think our players are excited about factions. The press seems to be excited about factions. And if, you know, if the people who enjoyed Guild Wars go out and buy factions and have a good time with that, then everybody wins. You know, certainly the business model has been proven to be 100% accurate. You know, we're happy because we have a thriving franchise that we can continue to support in the way that, that players expect it to be supported. And the players are happy because, you know, they get a great, compelling story, great, compelling content on a regular basis, but they're not being charged for it every month. So, you know, it really is looking like a win for everybody.
And just staying on that topic, I mean, right now, I'd say there's three subscription models. There's the standard subscription model, three MMO models, should I say. There's the standard subscription model, like, you know, World of Warcraft and EverQuest and so many others, is that you buy the game, at least in this country, you buy the game, and then there's a monthly fee. And then there's what actually is also very interesting, the ad-based games that are completely free. You know, you can download them and play them all you want, and they make their money through, you know, in-game ads. And then there's yours, which is you buy the game, and then it's free forever.
Right.
I'm just surprised. I mean, no one else is. You guys bit the bullet. You're proving that it's successful. You have over 1 million people. No one else seems to be, going that way. Are you surprised by that? I'll be honest, I'm a little surprised that other people aren't picking up on this model, because I think it's probably the best of them all.
Well, I think there's a couple of factors involved. First of all, you know, we have seen, I think Sony made an announcement earlier this year that they were going to be working on a no subscription fee type of MMO. But I really do think that, it's a daunting technical undertaking to be able to pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just say, hey, we're not going to charge a subscription fee, and then not seriously sit down and develop a technology base and a game design platform that supports that. You can't, for example, take EverQuest and just say, oh, we're going to make this no subscription fee now.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't designed of it. You have to design the game from the ground up to work this way. And, you know, Guild Wars is a staggeringly complex game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at things that you don't see, like, for example, the fact that you don't create your account on a server and then be limited to that server forever. You create your account in this global namespace, and our global server infrastructure kind of migrates your character around the world on demand. If you play with somebody from Singapore, it figures out whether it should host it in Stockholm or Korea, migrates your character record, locks it down while you play, and then migrates it back to your home territory. You know, all this kind of complexity goes on behind the scenes, and that's what makes it work. In order to develop that, you know, it took us almost 5 years to develop that with a team that was literally probably the most experienced team in the world at doing real-time game networks. You know, it's not something you just kind of say, hey, we're going to go do this. It's a real commitment. And I think that the other factor is that, you know, we know we will make less money per player. There's no question about it. Absolutely no question about it. We make less money per player. But we believe for now, and especially over time, that we will have a lot more players because we're making less money per player. And that's, you know, that too is how we choose to, you know, generate the revenue that we need to support the game over time. So yeah, it's, you know, I mean, there are trade-offs, but it's a very specific thing that you have to go decide to do, and it takes guts, and it takes, you know, you really have to be willing to step out there and go out on a limb. And I just don't think that every company has that kind of appetite.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, everyone, it's still, I mean, it's what the game's been out for about a year now, and we're still talking about it. You know, we're still talking about this amazing model and how great it is. It's almost like, wow, you get to play the game and you don't have to pay to play it. I mean, it's like, it's almost counterproductive.
Well,
but
you know, it's interesting too, because I think that people don't really think about it much anymore. You know, our players just think, oh, it's Guild Wars. You know, yeah, that's the, you don't pay a subscription fee. But the fact that, you know, not only have we had, you know, in terms of downtime, you know, our record is, I mean, you know, the level of support we bring to the technology infrastructure is just, you know, way beyond any other MMO on the market. I mean, we're, you know, constant 24-hour, 7-day-a-week service, no downtime. And then the amount of support in terms of just supporting the game and upgrading the game and adding new features and adding new content, not even looking at things like factions, which we sell. But I mean, just as you were saying, you know, look at how the game has changed from the time we released it on April 28th of 2005 to today. You know, there are parts of it that are unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially to me who stopped playing for a couple of months. And I was like, what is going on? Who are all these traitors? What is going on? So just out of curiosity, Is this the same model worldwide? Like, I know in Asia, like in China is a good example, you know, because piracy is so rampant, the games there are free, and then you just have to pay through cards or pay a monthly subscription fee to actually play the games.
Right.
So do you have the same model in Asia or Korea, or is it slightly different over there?
Well, so our commitment on a global basis mm-hmm. was there will never be a subscription fee required.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be some territories for whom a subscription fee is the preferred way to play the game.
Right, right.
And specifically, for example, in Taiwan, mm-hmm. You can subscribe to the game, or you can you know, purchase it. They're not used to purchasing games
right.
Up front. And so the nice thing about the model is that we're able to tune it for what's best for the players in every single territory. You know, there's always an option to just buy the game and be done with it in mm-hmm. every territory.
I see.
But we do support other types of access models in those territories where it makes sense and it's what the players are wanting.
Right. Yeah. I've talked about this on my show before, and it's just that the models, especially in Asia, are just so different than ours. You know, people don't buy games. They, you know, you have subscription models because a lot of people don't have even their own home computers. I mean, that's improving, but a lot of people go to, you know, the network, the cafes, and they play there. So
right.
they have to have the ability, and because you want to get your game into as many cafes as possible, it's also easier for you to give out the game to millions of, you know, computers and cafes, and then have people subscribe. It's just so different. It's night and day from there and here. I was just curious how that works. So you do have the possibility for people to just buy the game, no matter what, Taiwan, Korea, once, and then they can play forever for free if they want to go that route.
That's right.
Oh, that's great. So 6 months, every new content continuously. So in this one, we have obviously the two new professions, and we have that territory control PvP. Do you want to touch on that a bit?
Sure. Well, it's the alliance and faction features
oh, okay.
in the game. And I'll point out real quickly, it's not just PvP.
Okay.
The entire system was designed, in fact, to address, you know, I was talking earlier about, you know, how we stood back and were able to look at Guild Wars and say, what do we really want to address in the future? And one of the things we wanted to address was Guild Wars has fantastic PvP and a very strong PvP community and, you know, excellent role-playing and a strong role-playing community, but the two communities are fairly distinct from each other. It's almost like we have two strong, thriving communities. And, you know, online role-playing games live or die. I mean, the community is everything. And so we really want to strengthen the community for Guild Wars by bringing those two types of players together. Most people do both, but the people who do only one or the other are you know, very strong and vocal elements of those communities. So what we wanted to do with the Alliance and Factions features was bring new mechanics into the game that were compelling for both types of players and would encourage them and reward them for working together. And here's how it works. In factions, two of the kingdoms that you encounter, the Luxans and the Kurziks, are at war and have been at war for hundreds of years. They are fighting for territory on the continent of Kantha. And you can actually see in the overmap when you bring it up the battle lines. There's a red and blue line of demarcation that shows where the current battle lines are. You, as you play through the game, will choose to ally yourself with one of these sides or the other. And once you do that, you can start participating in the war. There are new alliance battles, which are PvP-centered, very large-scale battles, that actually move that line of demarcation across the map. We update the line, the position of the line, once per night on a 24-hour clock. And so participating in these huge alliance battles will determine how those battle lines are drawn. Once the battle lines are redrawn, all the cities that fall within your territory are now candidates for control by members of your guild alliance. Guilds in factions can form together and form guild alliances, which are kind of, think of guild alliances as guilds of guilds.
Mm-hmm.
Your guild alliance can then compete for control of the cities that are within your territory. And they do this through two new types of missions, the challenge missions that I talked about earlier, which were the scored missions, and the competitive missions, which are kind of like a RTS style mission where there's resource nodes and specific strategic objectives that you're trying to accomplish. In those missions, you are competing against a team on another side, but it's not direct combat. It's not PvP. Your goal is not to go annihilate the other team. Your goal is to achieve your strategic goal, and their objective is to stop you from achieving that strategic goal while achieving their own strategic goal. So there may be some skirmishes for resources, but overall it's not a big PvP fight like guild matches are. Those are both role-playing focused maps. And winning in those gains you faction, which is kind of a measure of favor with either the Luxans or the Kurzaks, depending on who you've allied yourself with. And the higher your favor, the higher your faction, the better, the more likely you are to be granted control of a town, and the better the town you will be granted control over.
So
controlling a town lets you do fun things like spawn parades or fireworks displays, single one-time events like that you can, that only your members of your guild alliance can spawn. But most importantly, and here's where it all draws together, each town has associated with it what we call an elite mission, which is a new type of role-playing map, role-playing area that has enhanced loot drops, very wickedly difficult monsters, and you know some of the highest, most challenging quest content in the game. That's gaining access to that is where you will find the best treasure, the best equipment, and the hardest challenges. And so, through all of this, through moving the battle lines and trying to compete for control of towns, both role players and PvP players are heavily involved. And so the best guild alliances are going to be those that have a very strong contingent of PvPers and a very strong contingent of role players. And so we're doing that to try to bring those two communities together so that it's meaningful for both of them to participate in guilds.
And will you be able to participate in this at the lower levels, or this is really sort of the high-end end game?
No, this is not high-end end game. Remember, in Guild Wars and also in factions,
right,
the level cap is 20.
Right.
And the reason we do that is because that getting to level 20 is kind of your training period in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Once you reach level 20 and go through what we call ascension, you're a full character. You're a real boy. You know how to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a good complement of skills, and the majority of the content, I would say in factions, roughly 80 to 85% of the content in the game is for level 20 characters. So we don't have to say, okay, these 10 missions are for level 40 to 50, and these 10 are for 30 to 40. Basically, all the cool stuff is available to the vast majority of players all the time.
Okay. And how long does it take, just for people who haven't played it, to get up to like level 20 approximately, would you say? Did they speed it up in factions, or is it pretty much the same gameplay mechanic?
Yeah, I would say it's sped up in factions. In the original Guild Wars, you got to the point of ascension probably roughly 30 to 40% of the way through the original story.
Okay.
Here you get to the kind of the key pivotal city and are considered ascended roughly 15 to 20% of the way through the main story. And that's also where, if you bring characters over from the original Guild Wars Prophecies campaign, those characters will come into that city at that 15 to 20% mark and be able to experience the rest of the quest and RPG content.
So this faction fighting that you described, do you expect this to be just something that's in factions, or is that going to be something that you're going to make part of the Guild Wars universe and then carry on from campaign to campaign?
This is probably the factions mechanic.
Okay.
This is what factions is all about. And you probably won't in Campaign 3 be fighting for territory like that, but there will be some other brand new mechanics that are very specific to that campaign.
Okay. Cool. So now I'm switching gears real quick and have just some general game questions, just some mechanic game questions, nothing too crazy. So one thing I always find very interesting about MMOs always is their economies and how they work, because
right,
it is so hard to do a in-game economy. And within 6 months of the games coming out, they get broken, and then the farmers come in, and this is a major issue. Now, your game, you have an economy, but it's loosely based on supply and demand. But so far, it still seems to be in check a year later. How are you doing that? I mean, how are you having this sort of supply and demand economy, and how are you fighting inflation?
Yeah, good questions. First of all, I agree with you completely. The economy of a game, no matter how much fun the game is, no matter how cool the quest content is, if the economy tanks, the game is over.
Right.
And we just believe that completely. In terms of the way the traders in the game work, there have been experiments with other games in a completely managed economy, mm-hmm. and then certainly there have been some very notable experiments with a completely player-driven economy. And it turns out that neither one of those work. In the first one, it's not elastic enough to really scale to reflect the actual supply and demand in the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's no emergent value to items. On the other hand, when you have a completely player-driven economy, it's subject to these wild swings, and it eventually gets to the point that certain items and certain loot that is, moderately rare to extremely rare, will either become completely inaccessible to even the most, to casual players, or everything will become so common, which is what happens over time, that everything is essentially worthless and gold becomes worthless again. What we've done with Guild Wars is taken a hybrid approach. It's not a player-driven economy. It is a player-influenced economy. Mm-hmm. All of the crafters and traders in the game have an innate sense of value. We know, for example, that black dye is going to be very valuable because we control how often it drops in the game. And so they have certain limits on, they know what kind of it could ever be at the maximum and what it could ever be at the minimum within certain constraints, and that's certainly an elastic value. But the players drive the value of that within those thresholds. So it's kind of like the stock market where, if the stock market starts tanking these days, there's so much regulated control on it, they'll just shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of triggers and events that can cause certain things to take place there. And that's how our economy works as well. We get economy reports every night that show in high detail the health and state of the economy. And there are certain triggers that will cause immediate notifications to the programmers. A very specific example of that is we had our first big issue with our economy on, I think it was either Monday of this week or Friday of last week. It turns out that there were some very valuable components that all of a sudden started selling for almost zero, that traders were selling them for very, very low prices.
Yeah, I heard about that, but unfortunately I didn't get
it. So it triggered alerts on the development team. We immediately got notified of it, and we unfortunately had to take the game offline immediately until we figured out what was going on because, we saw this huge spike in people buying these components, and it was going to just destroy the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to take the game offline for several hours and restore it to a point, restore the entire game world back to a point, just before this problem started to take place. And of course, we corrected the problem, which turned out to be, of all things, a bad network card on one of our database servers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was lying about whether it was processing transactions. And so we addressed the problem and brought it all back up. But, we were able to do that very quickly.
Yeah, I do find it interesting. As you said, this morning I logged on, orange dye is 100 gold and black dye is 7 platinum, just to give people an idea. It's always, that black dye is always up there. Of course, now I feel like the idiot when, you're playing the very beginning area, like where you're level 1 or 2 or 3, and then there you have the higher level guys standing around saying, oh yeah, I'll buy that black dye from you for 50 gold, and you think you just did a great deal, and of course, you got ripped off. Which happened to me. So,
yeah.
But one thing I was wondering is that, your economy seems to be working really well because it is almost very controlled and regulated. But one of the downfalls of that is that you don't seem to have a trading system. And that's one thing I will sort of criticize you is that it is really tricky or difficult for me to buy things or trade with other players because there's no auction house. It's just people sending messages back and forth. I mean, is that by design? Are you thinking of maybe enhancing that or... Your thoughts on that?
That is something that we want to address as well. I mean, we hear the community loud and clear on this. It's obviously something that's important for us to address in the near future, and it's in the works.
It's good to hear.
Yeah. We will address that. There will be it'll be expressed, and we won't roll it into a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a live update at some point in the foreseeable future that provides new features for trading. So yeah, I'm not gonna dance around that one at all. That's definitely something we need to add to the game.
Good. Glad to hear it. And one thing I found interesting is that because of that, I do find the very interesting side economies that are appearing, because it's so hard to sort of sell things and make money. Then you have all these people that are inventing their own jobs. One of my favorite is the runners.
Yeah, the runners.
The runners. It's brilliant. You know, it's like people aren't thinking of these things. I mean, I look at these games probably very differently. I look at these as mini simulations of real world theory. And I'm seeing, you know, people come up with their own ways to make money. And probably you should explain how the runners work. I'm just curious what you think of that whole runner situation, of how it sort of evolved into its own, you know, gameplay mechanism.
Well, I do agree with you. I think that the virtual economy is just like the real world. Every ecological niche will be filled over time. And I think that you know, philosophically for us, we want that to happen. We never foresaw that running would be a viable profession within the game, but we're thrilled that it is. I mean, that's great.
Yeah. Why don't you explain it real quick for people who don't know what that is?
What's that?
Why don't you explain the running real quick, what that is real quick?
Well, it's there are certain places in the game that you can access only after making it through a certain mission. So, for example, the major city of Lion's Arch is something you have to unlock. You have to complete certain missions and then actually traverse through the mission to unlock it for the first time, and then it becomes available on your map. And runners are people who will essentially take you through there and unlock those for you so that you don't have to spend the time fighting through it on your own.
You know, it's funny. It's just like I always see, now you see, I'll run you to this place for, you know, 1,000 gold,
yeah.
Run you to this place, 1,000. And it's interesting. It's like this whole sub-economy has appeared.
Yeah, it's like an armed guard. It's like an armed tour guide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, I think that is, when you start seeing things like that, it's a sign of a healthy game environment. And ideally, you know, as we look to the future of the game, you know, I certainly don't think that introducing something like an auction house would preclude people from doing those types of things. We want to find more ways for people to be able to enjoy the game like that. And so, I think it's great. I mean, running's great.
Yeah, I like it too. So one thing that I haven't touched on, and probably not too many even previews that I read, is the your competitive worldwide tournaments that you continuously have huge prizes, ridiculous amounts of money. it's amazing. It's like you know, it's like a lot of other. Well, you guys run that yourself, because I'm just interested in just that whole phenomenon.
Right.
Because most of these other tournaments, you know, think about it. You have an MMO and you have online tournaments that you run yourselves that are occurring worldwide. You know, this is sort of almost anti-MMO.
Right.
How did that all come about, or what was the thinking behind setting that whole up?
Well, you know, we are certainly, I think, the only MMO in existence, or again, I should say online role-playing game, because when I say MMO, people assume certain things, that has a tournament. And the reason we can have a tournament is because we do truly have a skill-based game. You know, you cannot have any kind of competitive play in a game that is a leveling game where, you know, time equals level and level equals power. So it's, you know, the fact that we're able to hold these tournaments and that they are successful is a testament to the skill design and the balance of the game. You know, it's a thrill for us because when we set out to make Guild Wars, the whole goal behind the game was make a really cool role-playing game. With all of the fun stuff that you expect from role-playing games, and then give each other, you know, give people a way to really meaningfully get together and kick each other's butt. You know, that's something like, even with games that don't support any kind of PvP, you know, you always, like when I was playing Diablo, I always wanted to do that. You know, I built up my character and I just wanted to, you know, whack on my buddies a little bit and just kind of see what would happen. So, you know, moving towards the tournament aspect, certainly it's a new dimension to the game. I think when we rolled out Observer Mode in December, people were able to use that to watch those top guilds playing and were really exposed for the first time to that kind of professional level of play and really see what that kind of high-level PvP combat was all about. And I think it got a lot of people excited about PvP, and you know, people are exploring it and really kind of getting into it for the first time. It's just like, you know, watching professional soccer. I mean, not everybody in the world is going to be a football player, but there's millions of people around the world who love to watch football. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, our goal with the tournaments is we're going to start having one every 6 months. They will be associated with the campaign release. So we just had our Guild Wars World Championship. This August, we'll be having our Guild Wars Factions World Championship. And as you pointed out, there's $100,000 prize associated with that, $50,000 to the winning guild, $50,000 divided among the other five participating guilds. And that's something that we will continue to support and promote and have a lot of fun with.
No, I think it's absolutely great. Because, yeah. I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, people trying to do these online sports or, you know, whatever you want to call it, the video game sports. And I have my own opinions as to how those are going to work out, and I think, quite frankly, most of them are going to fail. But your mechanism actually might have some merit and actually seems to be working and is advancing towards that goal because, you know, whether or not, you know, one of the big issues with me is that, you know, they keep changing the games. And, you know, when you follow professional sports, you follow the sport. You don't actually follow the, you know, you follow the players come and go. But the game stays the same with, you know, professional video game sports, whatever you want to call it. You can't continuously change the games over and over again because people will get confused and they'll get bored and they don't want to keep relearning the games. But you have sort of almost figured it out. You're on a hybrid because you can update the game factions, you know, through chapters and campaigns over time, but the gameplay is still the same. The you know, core classes are still the same. You just maybe enhance that a little bit over time, but it's still the same game. So whether I'm watching it now or 6 months from now or a year from now, I'm still going to be able to watch and use the same types of strategies. They're just going to evolve over time. So you'll actually be able to build up an audience, you'll build up a following, you'll actually be able to build up, you know, people will continuously get better and not have to reinvest their time into learning the newest first-person shooter. You know, again, I think that you guys are really hitting on something that really hasn't gone unnoticed by a lot of people right now.
Well, cool. You know, thanks for saying that. I'm glad to hear your perspective on that. And I would also add to that that, you know, if you're going to have a professional sport, mm-hmm. you've got to have professional players. And if you're going to have professional players, they have to be able to make money.
Right.
And so, you know, the having a substantial cash prize to us is, you know, the primary driver. You know, why was the first one such a success and why does it look like this next one's going to be a success? Well, $100,000 is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Just out of curiosity, how do the different countries play? I mean, obviously, I know how Americans play, and I know how the Europeans play. You know, are in the Asian countries, are they really competitive in just doing the online tournaments and trying to do that, or are they into the role-playing? I'm just curious what your experience has been worldwide, the play styles.
You know, it's interesting. There's different each country seems to take a different approach to it. Here's a perfect example. So we launched into Taiwan and Japan within a couple of weeks of each other in January. Mm-hmm. And within a week of launching into Japan, they had competitive guilds on the top 100 ladder, but none from Taiwan.
Hmm.
And, you know, it turns out that the Japanese went straight for that PvP. They went straight for the they created the pre-built PvP players, and they really got into the strategy and just went right for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Taiwanese players were more interested in taking their characters through the role-playing content first, really getting familiar with the game and building up their characters. You know, they weren't as interested in the pre-built characters, so there was a much longer delay as they wanted to explore every nook and cranny of the game before they really started getting into the PvP. So I thought that was very interesting. And also just in terms of the PvP play style, Americans and Europeans tend to be more focused on the build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what professions are we bringing in on our team and what skills do those professions have? And let's have 8 or 9 surprise builds ready to go. Whereas the Korean teams focus a lot more on teamwork and the tactical level of play. It was interesting to note during this last World Championship, anytime the combat came down to two teams just closing into melee,
mm-hmm.
you know, right there into direct combat. The Korean teams were just so dominant. But before that time, when it was still a lot of strategic give and take, the American and European teams really did well. And we saw that over and over where the match would be heavily in favor of either the European or American team until the last 5 minutes when it really came down to the close quarters combat, and then the Korean teams would just really dominate. So it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's and that's something I like about your game is that you can play, you know, you can play worldwide. You can play against the Korean teams if you're in America and or European teams, wherever you want, no
right.
problem. How does it handle that, by the way? I mean, every so often I'll see throughout the game, you know, the Korean alphabet. You know, I was like, this team's one. I'm like, okay, I have no idea what that says.
Right.
And I guess now in Japan you have to have a Japanese parser. Do you have any translation at all, or is it just do you have to sort of play on your country server because that you don't have a translation matrix or anything that was done in, was it Final Fantasy Online, I think, did that, where you can actually play in Japan and it would actually translate what you were saying or typing. Do you have to play in your own country?
So what we do is, in general, we have this concept of home territory.
Right.
Whenever you create your account, it creates in your home territory. So if I create an account from Seattle, I'm in the American territory. And if somebody creates an account in Munich, then they're in the European territory. And obviously the same holds for the Asian countries as well. And in general, when you're playing, when you go into an outpost and, you know, form up a party of people, you're always going to be around people who speak your language. In fact, in Europe, if you're in France, not only are you in the European territory, but you go into a French language district.
Hmm.
So we always try to group you with people who speak your language. At any time, you can travel out of that district and go into the international districts. And the international districts are where people all over the world meet. So you'll find people in there speaking German, Korean, Japanese, French, Italian, Spanish, German, everything, you name it. And that's where guilds who have members who are worldwide, they set their territory to international territory so that they can all meet together wherever they are in the world and play together. So for most people who just want to play with people who speak their language, we make it very easy to do that. But for those people who really want to venture out and be international citizens, we make it very easy for them to do that as well.
And the voice, and you have voice chat built, or it's not built into the game, it's, how is the voice chat work? Is that separate or is that built in?
We actually don't have voice chat built into Guild Wars at this time, but it's definitely on the feature list.
Okay, because I remember, I think the original Guild Wars came with a microphone and the...
The Logitech headset, yeah. So we certainly interoperate well with, all the big chat servers, the TeamSpeak and the Ventrilo.
Right. But it's not built into the game. It's an add-on. But that is something in the works, as you
said.
Yeah,
that's right. It's not built in yet, but stay tuned.
Mm.
Lots of cool stuff coming up this year.
I see that. So, a few quick things. So, what's your favorite build? I'm curious. What do you like to play?
Well, I am very enamored with the new Ritualist.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I find that the ability to... for some reason, I find the maintenance and management of spirits that you summon. You know, the ritualist summons spirits to do all our dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
But each of those spirits will do a specific thing. Like, for example, one of them is just simply called Pain. And you summon the spirit, and it acts like a turret in an FPS. So you can position it on the battlefield, and the spirit stays there and just does area damage to anybody who comes close to it from the opposing team. But the cool thing to me is not deploying your spirits to do these things. It's managing them. There are, for example, skills that you can cast that will teleport your spirits to your location. So if I place this Pain kind of turret spirit, and then later I want to move it, I can cast another skill to teleport it to my location and reposition it. You can also deploy spirits all around the battlefield and then blow them all up, doing splash damage to everybody in the area. So the thing that really makes it cool to me is not only the specific the specific skill that each one brings to the table, but then the way that you can manipulate that after it's been summoned.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like your, I guess, equivalent of the pet class is the ritualist.
Yeah, except that you have a little bit more control
right.
over deployment and management. Yeah.
And what do you summon exactly? These are I read something that at the high level they're dragon spirits or some pretty nasty things you can summon at the end.
Yeah, they're chained bestial spirits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the specific
right.
lore behind each one.
Right.
I do think that they as you raise your attributes, then you know, you can summon different kinds of spirits, right, for different kinds of skills.
And now, of course, the assassin. What do you think of your new assassin? You gotta like that too.
Yeah, well, assassins are just cool. I mean, everybody loves the concept of the assassin. When we first announced the two new professions in the game, I think everybody was more excited about the assassin. But now that they're playing with them a little bit, I think more people are starting to really dig the ritualist. But the assassin is cool because her new skill package allows her to dominate the battlefield through spatial positioning. She has a set of skills called shadow stepping that allows her to instantly move to any location. However, you have to have a path to that location. In other words, you can't just teleport yourself to the top of a castle wall or something. If it's someplace you could walk to, in other words, if there's no gates in your way, mm-hmm. Then you can shadow step to that location. But what's cool about that is just she's a dual wielding class. She has dual dagger attacks. And you can instantly teleport somebody somewhere, do your attack, and then be gone before they even know what hit them, mm-hmm. which is a really fun kind of kinetic aspect to the combat experience.
So one question I have, and this is actually sort of a balancing gameplay type question, not too hard, but it's one thing I noticed is that do you guys have a test server? Because I know you don't seem to have a test server or somewhere where you could actually test out things. Well, if you know, for most people are familiar, most MMOs almost have test servers because, to break the game or to test it with, hundreds of thousands of people playing it. And also, right, it's a lot easier to get balance issues done. You know, instead of 10 people or 15 or 100 people playing the game, you get a couple thousand, and then you can quickly compile stats, get balance done.
Right.
How do you guys do it? Because you don't have a test server, so how are you doing the balance? Or am I missing? Or you have a secret test server somewhere?
We do have a test server. And in fact, when we first started developing the game in early 2001, mm-hmm. Early 2002, we started our external alpha test. Mm-hmm. And this was at a time when the game was literally white blocks moving around on a flat plane. Mm-hmm. But what we did was we set up a server and we invited a couple hundred people that we knew, friends and family, gamers that we'd played with before, into this alpha test. And then that has grown since then. We still have this external alpha test. We do have what we call the dev servers. Mm-hmm. All of these external testers, there's about 1,000 of them, have access to the dev client, which gives them access to the dev servers. Mm-hmm. And then every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have all-call sessions where we test the game during the evenings and have everybody come in and help us test it. So absolutely, when we're rolling out new features or making skill balance changes, it's always thoroughly beaten up on the dev servers before we publish it to the live servers.
So the actual character classes, obviously, we touched on it a little bit, the Ritualist and the Assassin. Are you, and you don't have to give a firm answer, I won't hold you to it, but are you expecting or do you plan to try to at least come out with new character classes with each campaign, or is that sort of you're going to have to see as it goes along?
Now, our plan is to introduce new professions with every new campaign.
Okay.
Professions and the 75 full skills that come with each new profession are kind of the vector of introducing new play mechanics, new skills, and new strategies into the game. And it keeps it fresh. It keeps it fresh not only for the role players, but for the PvP players as well. Mm-hmm. Again, obviously I can't look out over 3 years from now, but our current thinking and current plan is definitely to introduce new professions with every new campaign.
So one thing I'm looking at, and it's funny you bring that up, 3 years down the road, is because with all of this, this campaigns and having it so that you don't necessarily have to have the same campaign. So let's say 3 years have gone by and you have Guild Wars campaigns 1 through 6.
Right.
And I have campaigns 1, 4, and 6. And you have campaigns 3, 2, and 5. And, someone else has all 6 and someone only has campaigns 4. I mean, do you think this is going to start getting messy? You're going to have real balance issues. You're going to have, people trying to form guilds, but they can't guild together because I don't have the same expansions that you have. I'm wondering how are you anticipating and trying to combat that and make it so that this is as streamlined as possible.
Well, is it going to be challenging? Absolutely. Is it going to be messy? To use your word, only if we fail. this is something that the game has been designed and architected to support from day one. Obviously, our thinking, every decision we make is vetted against, you know, where does this go over the next 3 years? Is this something that's sustainable? Is this something that could cause balance problems, you know, down the road? And that impacts everything. It impacts character design. It certainly impacts story. It impacts the way and the type of new skills that we introduce into the game. It is a challenge, though. I'm not going to shy away from that. And a large amount of the mindshare that our design teams devote to these things is dedicated to making sure that we manage that effectively. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, talking about specifics, talking about skill balance, you know, we have a skill balance team whose full-time job is to ensure the balance of the game. You know, that's done not only through play testing, but also through data analysis and also just making sure that the fundamental skill system, the math behind it is solid and sound, and that we can, in addition to anecdotal balancing, do theoretical balancing up front. It's a good question, and I can tell you that a large part of our mindshare is devoted to ensuring that the game stays balanced over time.
Because mathematically, if you keep adding two professions, and what makes your game crazy in a way, right? My term crazy is that unlike other games, well, if you add two professions, you only have to balance that profession against the others. But since you can have you can mix and match your professions. You can have, you know, a elementalist assassin or a ritualist ranger. You have to, it gets increasingly complex every single time you add a new profession. You have to rebalance continuously. So
that's,
I can,
right,
see that really getting very, very tricky, especially, yep, down the road when you have, you know, if you have 6, then 8, then 10. it gets harder, not easier, as time goes on.
Yeah. And that's why we say around here all the time, thank God for streaming technology. Because, you know, if we biff it and there are issues that need to be addressed, then we can resolve them very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something we have shown ourselves very willing to do in the past and will continue to be willing to do. And also, I think, you know, what helps us too is that we have a philosophy here that there is no state of perfect balance. There is no time ever in the future of this game where we're going to say, we have achieved perfect balance, and so we're done with that. To us, their balance is something that can go stale over time. Even if you achieve balance, 6 months down the road, if you have not changed it at all, then it starts to go stale. So very recently, we released a new live build that overhauled a lot of the older skills. What we were starting to see is that over time, people had developed their favorites, and there was kind of a general analysis of which ones were the best and which builds were the best. So what we did is we went through all of the 450 existing core skills and identified skills that were really cool but weren't being used very often, and we refreshed them. We made them more powerful, or we tweaked them a little bit to make them more useful in more diverse circumstances. And, you know, as expected, it has completely refreshed the game balance of the game. So game balance is not something that you either have or don't have. It's something that's either fresh or stale. Obviously, there can be times when when something is very wildly imbalanced, and certainly we fix those immediately. But we do view it as a living, breathing entity on its own, and we change it regularly, and we'll continue to do that as well.
So another quick question. In the game itself, you always play a human. But I do notice, you know, there's other, through the campaigns or through the campaign missions within the campaigns, or what is it, the missions where you the story is told, you have like different races. There's like elves, or not elves, there's dwarves I've saw. There's a couple of different variations of races. Are you ever planning on maybe adding that, or are you sort of thinking humans throughout the whole game?
I think it's very likely that you'll be able to play non-human races in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I can't commit to any specific plans, but I will tell you that that's something that a lot of people around here would like to see. In factions, you'll be able to take on non-human henchmen for the first time.
Mm.
So you will have parties of people with monsters and creatures working on your behalf. But I would not be at all surprised to see in future campaigns start getting into non-human playable characters.
Mm-hmm. So I think we pretty much touched on almost everything. I can't think of anything that we couldn't ever have touched on, but...
Great. Well, you certainly have a substantial editing task in front of you, Steve.
Well, editing? What's that? Although I have one last question.
Okay.
All right. Now, your game has been called and compared to a collectible card game many, many times.
Sure.
City of Heroes has a collectible card game. Auto Assault has a collectible card game coming out. And even WoW is getting a collectible card game coming out pretty soon. Where's the Guild Wars collectible card game? Any plans?
Yeah, I mean, of all those games, we certainly the design of our skill system certainly lends itself well to a CCG. Yeah, that's something that's in the works. There'll be announcements about that in the future. Yeah,
that's good to hear. Because it's funny. It's like every preview, you always see it's like a collectible card game. You mix and match. You know, everything's like the collectible.
Right.
Like, why does every other MMO have a collectible card game? This is probably the most obvious one.
We're talking about that extensively internally right now, and I think it's very likely we'll see something like that in the future.
Very cool. All right, Jeff. Well, thanks a lot for taking out the time and talking to me.
You bet, Steve. Anytime. Always a pleasure. Good luck.
So once again, thank you so much, Jeff, for sitting down and talking to me about Guild Wars. I would definitely say check this game out. I really like this game quite a bit. Not just the fact that it's I think it's a fun MMO and it has a great model because it is skill based as opposed to you just instead of you just sitting there and leveling up your character endlessly. It's hard to see at first, but the more you play it, you'll actually start to see the deep skill that is necessary for actually building your character and using there's there's 75 different talents for your character, and you only get to choose 8 whenever you play the game. So you really have to learn how to balance and maximize your talents to the best of its ability. And if you're playing the PvP, you really have to put together an extremely balanced team. And at the highest levels, it's a real challenge. It's a great game. If you haven't played it, you can get Guild Wars. You might even want to wait for Factions when it comes out. But definitely check out. There's that free weekend coming up. I believe it's the 24th or the 25th. It's very soon. So I forgot. I'm not in front of the computer. And, of course, the internet is not working where I am right now. So I'm doing this off memory. But we mentioned an interview. And you can actually try Factions for free and give it a whirl. But anyhow, I, as I said, am at GDC. It actually starts very soon, any minute now. So I'm going to go head in and see who I can snag for some interviews. I know there's about 3 dozen people here from different game companies and people that I know. So I'm just going to sort of wing a portion of it. I've got, have a couple of meetings, but a good portion of it would be just sitting around talking to guys and pulling out the microphone and just pulling out some interviews and see what we get. And that's it. So this is Gaming Steve signing off from San Jose at the Game Developers Conference 2006. And I will be talking to you guys later this week. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, remember to always finish him!